Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood with Eddie Pence, Nikki Corulla. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
See, I'm way peppier. Way peppier.
Why are you so peppy?
I'm not, actually. I need caffeine, so I'm trying to overcompensate for my lack of caffeine.
I just had a shot of espresso, and it did not work.
Really?
No, it did not register at all.
Well, you just took it?
Like 30 minutes ago.
So, like, it should hit by then.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I'm very disappointed in it.
Oh, that sucks. Any sugar in it? Just straight espresso.
Just straight espresso.
Good man. Good man. From where?
Just homemade.
Oh, nice.
Homemade.
I didn't know you make it at home.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
You got so how's your week been?
That's all right. It's okay.
There's
nothing going on.
I caught up on all kinds of movies and TV shows that I wanted to see, and I couldn't wait to talk to you about it. We talked a little bit about it in the elevator, but I watched the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
Pearl Jam got inducted.
Mm-hmm.
Journey got inducted.
Yes.
Nile Rodgers got inducted.
Yes.
Who else am I missing? Who else got inducted? I'm blanking on it.
I just fast forward to everything. I just watched those two.
Yellow, that was pretty dope. Jeff Lynne, I'm a huge fan of. But dude, Pearl Jam. Let's talk a little about Pearl Jam. Dude, they were so badass.
Yeah. I thought it was cool they let their original drummer play live.
Me too. I mean, that was amazing.
And most people didn't know he was the original drummer.
And he played on the tracks that he recorded.
Yeah.
And played.
He's the one who brought the band. Like he was on the Saturday Night Live band, I believe, at the time.
And why did he leave? He just
didn't. He just couldn't. I think from what I read, it's like it was too much. Mm-hmm. Like the schedule and touring. Like I think he was more of, I don't know, not a home guy, a family guy or something. It was just too much. Like that's not what he wanted.
That's crazy.
So that's what I read. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was cool they let him play.
Yeah, it was cool that they let him play, and it was funny what David Letterman said. He's like, the top row of the balcony is all the Pearl Jam drummers that have come.
But that was only the first three albums. But they've had, what's his face from Soundgarden? Matt Cameron for like 17 years now.
So. He's a badass.
Yeah.
When I saw them, when we played Bonnaroo, he was the drummer there. And he played with like four other bands at Bonnaroo. So I was like so impressed that he was doing like the main stage. And then he was doing like the tents too.
Yeah, he just loves to play drums.
Yeah, it's just, he's a badass. Great pocket. But yeah, man, the band just sounded great. Great little set list. I love the story that David Letterman told about Eddie Vedder making a guitar for his kid.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. It was just warm. You know what I mean? It's like everybody was just there to celebrate, and it was pretty incredible.
No, it was good.
Nile Rodgers, I was actually surprised that I didn't know he did the Madonna record.
He did everything.
Yeah, man.
Like that everything.
Guy, you know, I wonder if the other guy from Chic, Bernard, I don't think he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but he deserves to be too.
Yeah.
Because he's done a lot of stuff as well. But yeah, it was awesome. I actually watched the whole ceremony uninterrupted.
No, good for you. I could not do that.
It was, what, you were bored?
Yeah, I love those. I cared about Pearl Jam and some of Journey.
So that was just like fast forward.
That was fast forward.
Nile Rodgers was actually my favorite. Like, you know how they put the little stories together?
Yeah.
That was my favorite one of those. And then I was waiting for a package today all day, and I ended up watching Cadillac Records today. Have you seen that?
No.
Story about Leonard Chess, how he put the record label like together. He signed Muddy Waters. He signed Chuck Berry, Etta James, and it was just all about their stories and how crazy the music business was like back then. Mm-mm. And just, I mean, there was no fairy tale like story about it, but it was really awesome. Like the performances were amazing. Just the story of Leonard Chess has always been like this peculiar thing that I didn't know much about, and just like how it all came about. I'd read stuff about it, like in liner notes, but it was pretty cool to see some of that. Just caught up in tons of movies. How was your Memorial Day weekend?
Just didn't do anything.
No barbecue, nothing?
No.
No barbecue?
No. Where? I live in an apartment. Where am I going to barbecue?
Yeah, come on. I barbecued on my balcony.
Nah, don't worry about it.
You're like, well, you could barbecue inside
the
house?
I had a kid had swim lessons. We had, you know, just whatever.
So he didn't have a day off.
No. I'm a comic. It's not like I slave 9 to 5 all week and like, that's oh, thank true. God, 3-day weekend.
Yeah, but don't you take those days off? I find that I have to.
No, because there's days I work and there's days I don't. It's like I don't have like a set schedule. So when I work. And when I don't have anything, I don't do anything.
I always find that, like, if I don't take time, like, even the holidays, because the whole industry kind of shuts down for the holidays.
Yeah.
Unless I have a gig or I'm playing a private event or something, if I don't have to work, I'm like, on those days, I'm not going to work.
I mean,
but now I'm, like, in midweek already, and I'm like, oh, my God, I got so much work I've got to do. It's kind of...
I take off if I don't have anything to do, that's my day off, if I have something to do.
You performing anytime soon?
No, I had some shows last week. I don't have anything this week.
How come you never promote them? Our listeners are waiting.
No, they're not.
Yes, they're waiting.
They're not.
They're waiting for you, Eddie. They're like, when is Eddie?
I'm not going to promote just a 10-minute gig in Pasadena on a Wednesday
Why
night.
Why not? There could be somebody right down the block.
No one cares.
No, I care.
No.
I care.
They do not.
I want to know, Eddie. Wait, did you play at the Ice House?
Yeah.
That's awesome. You got to tell me when you play
Saturday.
There, man.
No, why would you drive all the way to Pasadena for a 10-minute set in a small room?
You're good. You're worth it, man.
No, it's not.
I actually like the small room. Wait, the big room is the one that you go in.
The big room is the big room. Well, the small room is the smaller room.
Well, I saw you in the small room.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the other side is the big room.
Yeah, the other side. The bigger room would be the big room.
Have you ever done the big room?
Yeah.
Do you prefer the big room or the small room?
I like the bigger room better.
Hmm. Next time you do the big room.
Well, the reason I don't like the small room is because it's a rectangle. So it's it goes wider than it does deep. So it feels like you're...
Are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah, I think so.
So. Isn't the improv like that, though, too?
No.
Hmm.
I mean, literally, the stage two at the Ice House, it's maybe 15 feet straight to the back of the wall from the stage, and then to the sides, it's probably like 35 feet on the side. So it's you're playing to the sides and not the front, so it's kind of...
I never think like comics would really... find a difference in a room, but there is a difference in just how the audience is around. Is
well, yeah, you're more... I think comics are more
engaged.
Attuned to where the audience is and more than any other performer.
Hmm.
Because you're constantly aware of the audience.
Yeah. And but you like I wouldn't think that it would matter so much as like where everybody's sitting. You know what I mean?
Well, you kind of want people... Because
you want them huddled. You want them huddled.
You're telling stories and jokes, and you're using your face and your body, and you've got to show everybody. If it's a long rectangle, the people on the sides aren't seeing.
So do you have like a favorite place that you performed?
No, any place. If it's a room like that, I'll back up to the back of the wall. If it's a bigger room where people are more in front of you, you play to the front of the stage.
So you don't have a favorite?
No.
You don't have a place in L.A. where you're like, oh, this just feels like home because I've done it so many times.
No, any place that puts me up is my favorite.
Oh, I like that. See? You're like a promoter's dream.
Yeah.
You hear that, promoters?
Just put me on stage. I don't care where it is.
And promoters are, for the most part, up like forthcoming?
Most promoters are just other comics.
Huh.
So you're just like, yeah, I'll do your show.
You're like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You do my show, I do. So why don't you promote shows? You're like, I don't want to do that.
No one's coming out to see me. No one's doing that.
Yeah, comedy is, you've really opened my eyes to the way that whole world works.
It's way different than music.
It is. It's, you know what, and I appreciate what you do so much more as a result of knowing. You should like do like a full-on documentary of how it is. I saw the like 5-minute one that you did, but you should do that. Was such an like engaging thing.
Oh, that was just me and my son. But yeah, I mean, comedy's like, I don't want to invite a bunch of people. I don't want a bunch of people I know to go to some bar show. I don't want to do comedy for my friends
because that's not as like engaging for you.
Yeah,
to,
but like
to
I don't
grow.
Yeah, I don't want to do comedy for people I know.
Yeah, you want to get real laughs.
Yeah,
that's the thing. But you know, having your friends there, it's like a good support system.
No, I don't want that. I don't want that at all.
Okay.
I'd rather not have anybody I know in the audience.
Now, have you anything like Eddie Murphy's Raw?
All leather suit? No.
Wait. all purple leather.
All purple leather.
Do you think, you know, he looks at that and he's like, that is...
Oh, no. That ego's so big. He's like, yeah, that was the right choice.
You think still?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, yeah, that was... the right. I took a pottery class this weekend Saturday.
What'd you make?
I made a pot. And I got to tell you, I have so much respect for pot makers. I thought it would be a very easy
thing. Were you on like the
I was on the wheel.
The wheel.
Yeah, on the wheel. And man, that shit is not easy. It is like timing and like support and like you're not comfortable when you're making it. You're like hunched over the whole time. It's really kind of like an arduous process. And I have a lot of respect.
Yeah.
And I can't believe some of those pots are like selling for like $2, $3. Like when you go
good
to like.
To know. I never had any desire to do it. And
dude,
now I don't.
You know
even
what?
More.
Yeah, yeah. So. I can't see you doing it. And if you can turn left at that at that little post.
You've just reaffirmed my belief.
But you know what? Stained glass class, that actually kind of surprised me. I never thought I'd like that. And I loved it.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
Just, you have to like try and be creative in whatever capacities you can.
I guess so.
That's what my girlfriend tells me. Anyways, it looks like our special guest has arrived. We have an amazing magician, Andrew Goldenhirsch. Say hello, Andrew. Our studio audience loves you.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do they fit in here?
I know. All 1,000 of them.
That's
all
really cool.
At the touch of my finger. I can just... Silence! Laugh! Laugh now! Yes! Okay. Silence! You know? That's how it works here.
It's really impressive.
So, Eddie, I'm going to tell you this. I told you this a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
But Andrew and I, we didn't know each other. And I went to a birthday party at the Magic Castle, one of my favorite places in L.A. to go. And Andrew was one of the performers. You actually performed in the cool... You performed in the parlor. Do you remember that room? You know the...
I do.
Is it the Parlor of Prestige or something like that?
Of Prestidigitation.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
Fancy name. It's actually my favorite room in the Magic Castle, too. And, man, he was so badass. All of his tricks were amazing. But I still tell my friends about this trick that he does. Am I allowed to talk about it? Can I talk just
well,
about
it? I guess, but it would be a big spoiler.
Oh, let's not talk about it then. Yeah, you're right. See, that's why I asked. I'm glad I asked.
Just one of those things.
But anyways... You got to see Andrew perform. We're going to talk a little bit about how you got into magic. Let's like go from the beginning. Like, what was the thing that got you excited about being a magician?
Wow, you know, it's a slightly more complex answer than that. A lot of people kind of had the one special moment. For me, it was a lot of them. I got to say, one of the early ones was this maybe. Dates me a little bit, but seeing Doug Henning back in the day. In fact, I was at my grandparents' house. I remember this very clearly. My sister and I were watching. I believe it was, I think it was actually live. And it was one where he vanishes an elephant.
Wow.
At the end. That was like that was the big final ta-da. And it was really, really cool. However, earlier in this special, he did a little thing with just a little pocket mirror and a coin. And he had a little boy sitting on stage next to him. And I think they were just sitting like at the edge of the stage. And I remember it was on like a little blue carpet. And it was just this very intimate, you know, up close thing. Just a mirror and a coin. And between those two things that I had witnessed, that was the one that really grabbed me.
The one that was like sleight of hand.
Yeah, because I remember seeing the elephant and thinking it was cool, and I wasn't sure exactly how it happened, but I had an idea of like how it would have had to have happened.
Right.
I had some idea. I don't know. My brain was going down certain pathways, you know, and finding at least partial solutions. But the coin thing, there was something just so beautiful and kind of surreal about it. And it was a piece that was kind of using reflections and the idea of sort of the surreal way that we tend to
and
think
And it's
about
a simple
mirrors.
Thing that
very simple,
becomes
very
like
minimalist,
unremarkable and then remarkable in like the snap of a finger.
Exactly.
And did you ever watch any of those like old David Copperfield
Yeah,
shows?
I probably did. I don't remember a lot of them. I do remember watching them. Nothing sticks out though.
I'm totally like a magic fan. Like if I see magic on the street, if I see it on a TV show, I'm stopping and I'm like, show me. I like scour the internet in the middle of the night for magicians and magic tricks, because I just think it's like such a cool profession. It just, I mean, everything about the job is, you know, it's illusions, but it's like trying to just mastermind the like the capturing of magic. You know what I mean? Like really making people believe and showing that you are like a wizard with magic. I mean, you are totally a wizard. I've seen your show twice, and it just makes me, you think, oh, okay, yeah, I can figure this out now. But it just made me ask more questions, and I think that's the sign of a good magician.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I want to maybe a slight tweak on the whole making people believe. I don't necessarily see it that way. But you were hitting on something. In a way, I think of it as like brain hacking. You know, we are, our purpose is to give people that experience.
Yeah.
The experience of magic, that little jolt. And, you know, we're in the modern age. People don't necessarily, quote, believe in magic.
Right, right.
And that isn't necessarily the goal. I mean, it's funny how this goes around full circle. The creator of the effect that Doug Henning had done with the mirror and the coin was created by a brilliant man by the name of Paul Harris. And he actually wrote, initially he wrote an article in one of the trade magazines called The Moment of Astonishment. And I found this really fascinating. That's kind of how he refers to that moment of magic, where kind of the brain...
moment.
Yeah, like, but... It's more of, it's like you get kind of flicked into outer orbit.
Right,
you know,
right.
Something happens. As Paul describes it, it's like, you know, all these boxes and, you know, all the information, all the things that we compartmentalize, and we have these stacks of ordered boxes, and then there's a moment where everything kind of gets, you know, the rug gets pulled out and things tumble, and you go into this sort of moment of free fall. And... it's a really visceral moment.
Yes.
And it's not about believing in magic. It's about, in fact, it's important that you don't believe. You
right.
know, you don't want suspension of disbelief.
Right.
It's that moment where what you know and what you've just seen, you know, they can't exist together.
Yes.
And really weird, funky things happen in the brain when that happens, including a shot of adrenaline and you know, your reasoning kind of goes kaplooey for a moment. It's a really visceral thing.
That's, you know, it's live energy too. It's like the best magicians, like I find, are the ones that are kind of like taking a trick that's kind of been done before and innovating it. So it's like what you think it was before becomes something new.
Yeah.
Different, interesting, and also has this what moment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes. Especially for those who know a little bit, you know, that are familiar with the classics.
So how young were you when you started doing magic? Like talent shows?
Right. You know, when I first started, like so many young boys, it was, you know, I was probably 6 or 7 when I got my first little magic set. I think I did some stuff for my sister's 5-year-old birthday party. So
nice.
I would have been my first gig.
Yeah,
there's like a photo somewhere of that. I'll be looking for that this summer. But, you know, it was on and off. Honestly, growing up around that time, music was my main thing. I started with classical piano when I was about...
I didn't know that.
Ah, well,
that's
why
amazing.
We have these interviews.
Yeah, totally.
No, when I was 6 or 7, I started playing piano, and that was the main thing I was into. Magic kind of, it would come in and out of my life. You know, I would have a friend who was into it. That would get me excited. I'd talk my parents into bringing me to the magic shop, and we'd spend about $30 and... Yeah, I'd show my friends and family things for a few weeks, and then, you know, that was it. It would go in the drawer.
Back to the piano.
Exactly, back to the piano. And then it honestly was not until about midway through college.
Wow.
And I guess the real moment was, well, just for lots of reasons, I was kind of drawn back to the magic world. I started showing up at magic shops, and I meet a guy in one of these shops who... wasn't a pro, who like worked part-time at a gas station, was an ex-con, was just this fascinating
He steal your watch?
Strange. Nope. But, you know, in chatting, we realized that there were things we could teach each other.
Yeah.
I was kind of new into magic, but I had gotten back into, yeah, I got into, like, fire eating and weird crap like that. But, you know, we realized that we had things to, you know, to learn from each other. So we start hanging out a bit, and, you know, he was mostly into, like, really intense stage stuff, and he worked with fire and worked with birds and, you know,
Eddie's, you should
daggers,
you should work some fire
like
and birds into your ass.
Hey, maybe
that could be your thing.
It's too much prep time.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you gotta, there's a lot of cleanup to it.
Yeah,
that's
another
story.
Wait, but, I gotta ask you. Sorry, well, go ahead.
You know, he's doing all this crazy intense stuff, but then he starts doing the close-up stuff, and that's when my head really exploded.
Brought you back
and
to that kid
yeah.
moment.
And he started doing some stuff with coins that just, yeah, I mean, my jaw dropped. And I guess all those times showing up at the shop, I didn't realize how far things could go. You know,
right.
That was my first time really seeing the stuff you couldn't buy in a magic shop.
Yeah.
And it started opening my world, and yeah, I was
and
hooked.
I've done some shows with magicians, mm-hmm. and man, it is like, it's like such a hard pairing for music and magic, because I always think magic's like, ooh, ah, and the music's like, I'm not into this, man. You know, it's like everybody can be a fan of magic. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
when it's done right and it's done well,
yeah.
I feel like there's such a broad part of it. But with every other kind of like art form, it's like everybody has these tastes. It's like with magic, it's like I love all of magic. There's not like one part of magic I like more than the other. Eddie, are you like that? Do you like all of it or certain aspects of it?
The magic shows I've seen, I want to be entertained by the magician, not just the trick.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want the magician.
Very well put.
Because you can see 100 magicians do the same.
Yes.
Yeah.
Illusion 100 times, but to see a guy that can capture your attention while doing that trick is, that's what, you know, not that I've seen a ton of magic shows, but the ones that have stood out in my mind are the ones that are like, okay, that guy's, that's like another level to it, I guess.
That's a good way to, yeah, I like this guy.
You
know? See?
Oh, I dig that. Yeah.
Because I went to the Magic Castle, I've been to the Magic Castle once,
yeah.
and I saw, it was a show where it was like, I guess it would have, you'd have like a couple different magicians would come on.
Yeah.
And there'd be ones that would stand out more than the others. And it wasn't because their illusions were so much better than the other, but it was just like the guy that knew how to hold the stage and perform.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. No, it's true.
It's performance art. That's what
and
it is.
The trick itself is one part of it, but, you know, ideally we are, I mean, without getting too like philosophical, we're kind of the conduit of it. But, you know, we're the one that you're watching.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, it's funny, but earlier you were mentioning, you know, the idea of taking classics and doing something new with them.
Yeah.
For me, I've always been intrigued by the idea of just taking a classic and really personalizing it.
Yeah.
And I guess by personalizing, I mean really being true to myself and my own taste and my own thoughts and my own beliefs and point of view and try and kind of put that out there.
Yeah.
You know, as we're going, you kind of, yeah, ideally you get to know the magician as they're doing their stuff, and you understand who they are as a person, and you understand their relationship to magic.
Yeah.
Which is really intriguing to me, because, you know, every magician has a different relationship to their magic. You know, Henning was like, you know, he was just as full of wonder as the rest of us, and, you know, was like a little kid. You know, Copperfield was much more suave, much more in control, you know. Everyone had
like Houdini for me when I was a kid was this mystical figure. And the more I'd read about him or the more I'd hear about him, I mean, it could be because he was way before our time. But, you know, like the legend just kind of becomes this supernatural thing.
Right.
But the tricks he was doing with the materials he was doing them with is just crazy. It's awesome, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, to see people kind of innovating with the amount of things that they have at their disposal now and still being able to make it captivating, I think that's not to pun intended, but that's the trick, isn't it, Eddie? That's
there
the trick! So, how did you, like, decide, okay, this is how I'm going to go about this, and this is the path I want to go, and this is the style I want to do? Like, I know it's all about presentation, right? So how do you even put together?
Where are the open mics for magicians? Where do you practice?
Yeah. Well, you know, I moved to Los Angeles just over 20 years ago, and the main reason was to be near the Magic Castle. I visited it a few times, and I realized, my gosh, you know, this is a place where I can really grow. This is an environment, this is a community of people who are actually doing this for a living, or not for a living, but are just completely passionate about it. It's full of so many types of magicians. Well, just along that spectrum, you know, from the professionals to these deeply devoted amateurs that sometimes end up being the greatest creators, you know, because they get to just kind of play around in that world, and they don't necessarily have to, you know, gig to make a living.
So that must be a rush for you, though. You moved here for that, and then you were performing there for so many years.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, and I'm not bullshitting, no bullshit. Like, I have been there probably like 10 or 12 times. You've actually been, you and Allie have been giving me passes.
Yeah.
And man, you are definitely the best magician I've seen at the Magic Castle. Like, by miles. And I've seen your act twice, and it makes me want to just see, like, you need to do like a 4-hour special, because I would sit there like a 5-year-old and just be like, do it again. Because, I mean, it really is awesome. And I've seen a lot of magicians. I go to Vegas and I see magic shows, and I see like the styles of, you know, how people are doing it on, you know, like in like small theaters, the big grand stages,
the
TV. Like, there's so many different mediums.
Yep.
What is your favorite medium to kind of perform? Is it a theater? Is it personalized, like right in front of people?
Yeah, you know what? I would say all of the above. That's the ideal. You know, just a couple months ago, let's see, it's end of May. So, yeah, just a few months ago, I was in Austin at the Vortex doing basically a one-man show, doing about 75 minutes.
Awesome.
And it was, let's see, what is the seating capacity there? I think it's under 100. And, but, you know, but this really cool setup so that, you know, they're going back on two sides. So, you know, you kind of feel sort of surrounded. You're right up close with people. But, you know, it's still a big enough group that you kind of get that, that crowd energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that's a real sweet spot. You know, I love having the energy of a big group. But there's something really special about the intimacy, you know, when you have double digits of people.
And when you see a magician, like, I've always talked to Eddie about this, when he sees comedians, like comedians watching other comedians are always like, that was funny.
Right, exactly. They don't laugh.
Yeah.
Funny.
So when you watch a magician, do you feel that way where it's like, that was a good trick?
Yeah.
Was it the old sleight of hand? You know,
it's really funny. You know, a lot, every magician kind of reacts differently to it, and we all, we have to. I mean, you can't unknow certain things, and you can't unsee certain things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there is this part of my brain that is constantly analyzing and thinking about that stuff. However, for me, okay, there are two things that are, you know, the sign that I'm watching a great performer. We'll say three. Number one is...
Is he wearing a cape?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just kidding.
In fact, let's make that one and two. And then number three is C, number one.
Exactly.
I know I'm seeing somebody great where... Okay, number one, if they fool me. You know, obviously. That's terrific. And I love getting to experience, you know, that feeling of magic.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen quite so often anymore,
but
you know, it still happens. So secondly, when I may understand how the trick works, but I miss the moment. You know, I understand what would have happened, but he, you know, somehow I wasn't aware of it. That's awesome.
Right.
And I give, you know, great kudos.
The mechanics, I guess.
I guess, yeah. But the third is when I completely forget even that I know it. Like, when I just forget to even be analyzing.
That's awesome.
If I'm totally pulled along and just enjoying the hell out of the show.
Yeah.
And then they ask me what I thought of this, and I'm like, oh, I wasn't even really watching that way. You know, I wasn't really analyzing. That is a sign that I'm watching a great performer.
That's awesome.
You know?
And there's so many, like, David Blaine obviously is a big name in magic today.
Absolutely.
Who's, like, somebody that you are influenced by in today's kind of like world of magic. You know, like you talked about the guy, the magician that you were influenced by when you saw him as a kid. But
it's funny, most of the guys that, people will ask that, and it's like most of the time you want to say, you know, these are mostly people you've never heard of.
Yeah.
There were, oh my gosh, I mean, there's a long, long list. I got to say, just since we're talking about Los Angeles, there's a guy who's still here in Los Angeles and still performing by the name of John Carney, who was one of the first, like, to me, really quintessential Magic Castle performers that I'd seen, directly of that lineage of, you know, Di Vernon, who was the first kind of resident magician at the Magic Castle, known as the Professor. So John studied directly at his feet. John had a great influence on me because he was one of the first guys that I saw up there on stage that was just a guy that wasn't, you know, full of the bravado and would actually kind of make fun of the little, you know, magician tropes and stuff and was soft-spoken and was clearly shy and was clearly a bit of an introvert and yet was doing these subtle, sublime and just shocking sleight of hand.
Wow.
And, you know, and hilarious moments, too. You know, I mean, I first experienced him through this early video cassette. Remember those?
Yeah.
Of him doing a couple Magic Castle shows. And I was just, I was stunned by how much mileage he was able to get by being so soft-spoken, so
simple,
kind of into but yet so funny and so just like mind-blowingly amazing. And you know, I gotta say that kind of gave me permission as this, you know, a more introverted person, as somebody that doesn't necessarily crave the spotlight, that there is a way of drawing people in, you know, without the kind of over-the-top bravado that I think that people tend to associate with magic.
Yes.
And
I'm sure you probably are like, oh, boy, when you see some of that. The bravado. Sometimes, I mean, as a performer, sometimes even I, like, not even being in magic, just like when you see some performances, it's like, okay, you're at like a 24, we need you at like a 7. Yeah. You know, it's like, you can turn it down a little bit.
Or what I also find fascinating, and I see this a lot in music, is people not playing to the actual venue that they're in.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We're in a banquet hall, but he's acting like he's at the London Palladium, you know? And
that's where it transcends, I think.
Yeah.
Next
and
level.
That's definitely a part of magic, too. I mean, there is a real intimacy to it. There is kind of a mind-to-mind contact you're doing. You know, if they're not following along your path, you know, you're not going to have anything. You're not going to get a reaction.
I want to ask a little behind the scenes, not that you have to give anything away, but you mentioned like you started working with fire, and you started like you were swallowing fire, right? Isn't that what you said? How do you practice that without knowing? Like, that's just crazy. Like, talk about what an open mic, like a practice, like shedding the magic trick. That is one that could really go bad, you know?
Yeah, there's another thing I do, in a lot of close-up performances that is also pretty dangerous, and a lot of things could go wrong. You practice these things slowly. At first, you're really, really careful. I don't still eat fire. Does that give you a little hint as to the...
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's something I was doing for a few years, and, you know, anything we do, we're doing a certain amount of risk assessment.
Yeah, of course.
Just getting in the car.
Does that raise the adrenaline of the performance for you?
Yes. Yes, it does.
When you raise the stakes.
Yes. Honestly, I still get a kick out of it. And, you know, this maybe leads back to something we've been sort of getting at this whole time. Something I've really shot for, which is a strange thing, is authenticity in magic.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that, even though, well, you mentioned Vegas. Probably my favorite show in Vegas is Penn & Teller's show.
That was my first show. I'm going to give you a high five. Oh,
you know,
they're awesome.
Unbelievably great, because there's so much mm-hmm. kind of giving you a peek behind the curtain.
Yep.
And then, you know, which is great.
Yeah,
and
they really tear down that fourth wall of magic, I guess.
Yeah, but then sometimes you realize...
But there's still a wall there.
Yeah, wait a minute.
They're tearing down the fake fourth wall.
Exactly, you know. And just, I love how meta it is. I love how self-referential it is. But I guess as a result of that, I love that they aren't insulting your intelligence as an audience. You
right.
Because we got to be real. You know, we're in a YouTube culture. We're a lot more savvy, you know. When I was growing up, you couldn't be up all night YouTubing these stuff,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
So, like, I love the idea of kind of acknowledging that, yeah, people get it to a certain extent. And then
and they have a show now,
too. You just gotta take it further.
Have you seen their show where...
Fool Us.
Yes,
yeah,
Fool Us.
Absolutely.
Where, have you seen the show, Eddie?
Yeah. No.
So Penn and Teller are like, they're the two judges,
mm-hmm.
and then they have magicians come up and show a trick, and then they'll write on a little diagram if they can figure it out.
Yeah.
And if they can't, then they advance. Do they advance to another round or something like that?
No, they just say they get a trophy and
and it's crazy because they see through a lot of tricks.
Yeah, they probably see.
But it's really amazing when they're like, I have no idea how you do that.
Yeah,
that's amazing. You mentioned them. They're one of my favorite magicians.
Absolutely. Well, because so much of what they do, and it's funny, the guys that tend to fool them are often able to do this.
Yeah,
you know, they do. They bring you behind the curtain. And then you realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm outside
just,
a whole other
It's just another sleight of hand they're throwing at you.
Right. Yeah. You know, so I really love the idea that they kind of, you know, well, as some friends of mine have mentioned, you know, they lead you down the garden path and then they turn the hose on you.
Yeah.
And that also kind of leads to that moment of astonishment, you know. Any unexpected moment. We've seen magic for decades. There are tropes. There are, you know, we envisioned the sawing a woman in half. So we already, you know, just in cultural humor, you know, there's all kinds of variations on that theme, you know. So, yeah, when you're up there doing something that people think they've seen before, you've got to acknowledge it and then let them know that, yeah, we're heading somewhere a little different. And it makes a huge difference.
I love all magic. Like, I really, like, I've seen... Penn and Teller, I've seen Chris Angel, I've seen Copperfield, I've seen, I saw The Illusionist, have you heard of The Illusionist?
Yeah, absolutely.
They just came here recently, maybe like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And still your show, with all the things I've seen, still your show is one of the best I've seen. I'm serious.
Wow.
That's why I was like so crazy about getting you on this radio show, because it's like I feel like... You can do anything that those guys can do and offer something else too, you know? So let me ask you, do you ever want to do anything on a television, like for that medium, or is that, I would feel like that would kind of be almost like a stale experience compared to the live energy.
It's funny. I love live. I've done television. I've done my share of TV stuff. I've done a few things here. Oddly enough, I've done a lot in Japan.
Hmm.
There's something that just aired about a month ago, in fact. They brought 10 magicians from all over the world to the Magic Castle, and they shot it there. And
that's awesome.
Did a three-hour special. I've been going back and forth there.
Where can people find that, just if they wanted to check it out?
You know what? I'm not sure yet.
You'll have to find out.
It might appear. Yeah, it might appear. You know what? If I can find a link, we can put it on the.
Yeah, please.
We can put it on the site.
Yeah.
But you know that's been a whole other fascinating experience. It just opened up, you know, so much for me. Just, you know, culturally experiencing things over there. But you know, yeah, I like television, but I mean. I just see it as a tool for the live shows.
Right.
You know, it's a great medium. There are people that really know how to do television well and how to make the magic play on television. For me, I would just rather be in front of people.
Right.
It's really that simple.
And is there ever a trick that's like too dangerous? Like, do you ever kind of feel like, I shouldn't do that? Or do you ever feel like, this is not something that I think that would be exciting for the purpose is like maybe you inside the magician's mind versus the audience. You know what I mean? Because like as a musician, I'm sure Eddie, you feel the same way. There is a part of catering to the audience.
Yes.
But with magic, it's like I feel like it's its own animal. It's like you're kind of creating something, not thinking necessarily about the audience. You're thinking about the trick more than you're thinking about the audience. I mean, right? I mean,
interesting. I think what you're describing is actually the great pitfall of performing magic.
Hmm.
That is the hardest thing to overcome.
Right.
When you're a comic, you're just up there with your words.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just you and the mic, and there's that direct connection. When you're doing music, you have your instrument.
Yes.
Okay? So you can dive fully into that, and you can focus on the mechanics.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can be, you know, you can have your head down and get every note right on the guitar, and they're going to love you. Okay?
Yeah.
You can't really get away with that in magic.
Hmm.
You know?
How so?
Because you kind of need both. It's, I mean, if you have your head down, and you do, I mean, there are people that have done that. I've seen shows like that with a deck of cards. And incredible things are happening, but you aren't connected to the performer. You
right.
are not connected to...
Yeah, if you don't connect the audience, it doesn't matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think.
It becomes sort of wall of sound.
Well, I think a lot of people, I think there's also a lot of there's people going to magic shows like, okay, let's see. Like they're...
Oh, yeah.
And they're just judging
yeah.
so harshly from
oh,
the get-go.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you don't connect with the audience to make them like you as a performer, they're just going to sit there and shake their head at no matter what you're doing.
It's very true.
So I think you have to make that connection with the audience.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it can be disarming.
Yeah.
But yeah, just for them to even be willing to go along with you to the ride. Because you're right. I mean, different personality types react differently to magic.
Yeah.
And there is a large, a decent portion.
There's like a stigma associated with magic.
Yeah. But like a lot of it is because it can make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, it's an unsolved puzzle.
Yeah.
You think it's like because it shakes their religious beliefs? Or
no, it's just because people are like, it's fake. It's not magic. They're just doing tricks. And they just have this stigma about like, whatever. They're just tricks.
There's that.
But they don't want to buy into like the experience of what's happening.
Yes, but it's funny. There are people you will talk to and they're like, oh, I love magic, but it frustrates me.
I think it's awesome.
No, because you're of a different personality type.
Right.
For some people, you know what? People are uncomfortable with the unknown.
Hmm.
I think we're seeing that over and over in lots of different ways. But yeah, like so for some people they are defensive in that way. And they're defensive in that moment and
if they feel stupid, they shut off.
Exactly. And that's, you know what, you nailed it. I mean, I think for some people, it challenges their, you know, their self-esteem.
Their ego.
And, you know, it's not necessarily that it doesn't make them bad or egotistical people. It's just, that's a visceral reaction.
Yeah.
So I really think it's really important to consciously put people at ease, to let them know that, you know, this is a good experience. If you get fooled, that's good. You're
supposed to be.
You're going to get an experience that isn't.
Well, that's the wonder of it, right? I mean,
it is.
Like the part of it is that you have perfected this craft to create this moment, that moment that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, and the funny thing is, like, I guess it's like the climax of the trick. I never think about that in the moment. It's like I'm always sitting there like looking at every detail,
mm-hmm.
just trying to see if I miss something,
mm-hmm.
because I know that moment's coming. But I find the best magicians are the ones that kind of like they give you the illusion that something's happening here, and then they'll pull something else out. They know that they're on to you. You know what I mean? It's like they know what you're looking for.
It's understanding a little bit of what you know and what you think you know.
Yes.
You know? And yeah.
So what's like a big obstacle you have when you're creating a trick?
Wow.
See, we don't waste any time here. We're asking the good questions.
Yeah.
We're not even close this time.
I mean, biggest obstacle, because, you know, it depends on what it is. You never know where the obstacle is going to be.
Hmm.
You know, I do very much approach it from the standpoint of problem solving.
Yeah.
You know, and really, in fact, sometimes this is actually a line in the longer show, is that, I mean, as magicians, all we really are creative problem solvers. You know, we're sometimes solving things with solutions that are not normally available to other people.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's solving a problem. You know, that's how it means something to people. So, oh my gosh. So where's the obstacle? You know, I mean, you would think naturally, of course, it could be in methodology and making something, being able to accomplish the magical thing. That would, of course, be the most natural obstacle that would come out. But sometimes it's a presentational obstacle.
Hmm.
You know, sometimes there's an obstacle in making sure that people truly understand what is going on.
Right.
Sometimes there's, oh my gosh. I mean, that's a really interesting question. I think it's the same thing for musicians, you know.
You know, I mean, it's easy to get blocked as a musician.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it with Eddie, too, as a comedian. Like, writing something, the one thing that's fascinating about stand-up comedy that he's kind of showed me, it's like, there is no rehearsal. Your performance is your rehearsal, and you kind of whittle it down. And I kind of feel like magic shares a little bit of that in the same way. Music, you can rehearse and rehearse and rehearse.
Yes.
And then when you get out there, you do whittle a little bit.
Right.
But nothing even compared to what you guys go through in whittling that while you're performing.
The evolution happens in performance.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do at home. You know, obviously you do a lot of the problem solving and you do a lot of the fixing and, you know, methodologically and just trying to, you know, obviously you want things smooth and consistent. That's homework. But beyond that, you don't know how something's going to play. You don't know. You don't fully understand how people's minds are going to go through this process until you put it before them and do a lot of observing and a lot of tweaking. And to me, that's a lot of what keeps it. It's exciting. That's what certainly keeps me present, you know, in a performance when I've done something hundreds or thousands of times.
I have a question. How much ownership do magicians take of the illusions? Do they, like, if you create something, you create a trick, does it just go into the ether and people can pull from it? Or is
not
it
necessary?
Or is it like, or you see a magician do what you do, like, that's mine, that's my bit?
Right.
That's a great question.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a whole very complex and nuanced kind of, you know, system of ethics, kind of like the same thing.
Yeah, that, I mean, you see, you know, a comedian do a joke, like, it's my joke. But there's a lot of parallel thinking in comedy.
Exactly. So, yeah. So you have the conversations and you work that out. But I think the gray areas tend to be quite similar to the comedy world, I think. You know, there's certain themes that are, you know, clearly well-plowed, well-plowed fields.
Right.
But, yeah, there are certain unique takes on things.
Like, how different, like, I mean, there's only so many, I might be able to oversimplify, but there's only so many ways you make a coin disappear from your hand.
Right.
But it's how you present that to the audience
with
your personality and your connection to the audience.
That makes it different, right?
That makes it yours.
Right, right.
So,
and there are, like, literally hundreds of directions to go.
Right.
You know, and the general rule of thumb, there's a lot that's been published over the years. And when, you know, so these are other magicians writing instructional books for each other. Some at beginning level, which are the stuff you can find in the bookstore, and then others, you know, you've really got to search out.
Right.
If it's been put in print, you're essentially giving other permission to do it.
Okay. You know?
And this is, of course, assuming that they bought the book or bought the video and such. You know, and then there are deals worked out, you know, between individuals and, you know, people have their signatures that they kind of keep a little closer to the vest.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, it's all over the map.
So all magicians wear a vest, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah.
do people copyright joke? I mean, not jokes. Jokes?
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to do it. In fact, there's a fascinating, I mean, you can read about it. There's a fascinating lawsuit that with Teller, where Teller actually won over somebody tried to essentially put his shadow piece on the market, which, I mean, you've seen it multiple times.
Yes.
That is truly one of the most stunning pieces of magic.
And he's been doing it for
chills
long
every
time.
Yeah, doing it for decades. But somebody tried to, you know, put it on the market and sell it to other magicians. And he was fortunately able to defend it in court.
Right.
And that's a wonderful thing.
So I met Penn and Teller after I was a kid, you know. Like my brother and I ran out.
Of course.
And Teller is like a mute during the whole performance, right?
Right.
So I kept on asking. I was like, "Do you really not talk, man? Do you really not talk?" Like I think I was like 7 years old. And he was like, "Nah, kid, it's just an act." Right, exactly. I was like, "Ah, oh, you're awesome."
And I love that about
Yes. Like he was like, "I'll show you the cracks." You know, it's like that made me go, "I love these guys. Yeah. They're so good." I watch all their television shows. Yep. Like it's all bullshit. That television show.
No, they had a really big influence on me also, and I think just that whole idea of you know using deception to demonstrate truth,
and it's also like really crass and like over the top.
Well, it's irreverent, you know, and I kind of like that too. I like that they don't take themselves too seriously
because I like when they show the entire trick. They're like, "Yeah, this is the trick. Exactly. Here's the ending." And then they do it again. You're like, "What?"
Yes,
you know, like
exactly.
Those moments are just amazing, and they're like seasoned like that. You know, so like what you were saying. Would Teller would he have copywritten that trick, or is it just because it's been performed, he can prove that he's been using it for so long?
There's proof, but there's also development, proof that I remember. I need to go back and read, you know, more about the details of the case. But you know, the fact that he was able to submit, you know, all these notes, and a lot of them were dated and were, you know, of the actual development of these ideas. And it's like so many other artistic conflicts over that kind of information.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, and it's like what you said, like the coin tricks. There's hundreds, maybe thousands of those, and it is like the presentation of how they make the trick magnificent to the audience. That is slightly different, you know what I mean? But where is that? Where is the overlap?
Right. There's a lot of gray areas, and you know the most important thing, and I think you know just about everyone who's been in magic for a decent amount of time knows that the most important thing is to keep communicating and checking it out with people.
And where are you performing? Are you doing any shows anywhere around the country?
Right now, well, I'm head off on a fun little endeavor in a couple of weeks. Which I don't know if we have time to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I'm headed to my childhood summer camp in Carbondale, Illinois.
Dude, I played in Carbondale, Illinois.
No.
I played SIU? At Southern Illinois University.
Yep.
The Sunset Concert Series.
Wow.
It's one of my favorite places I've ever
played.
There
we go.
Man, we played for like 2,500 people. It was like, dude, I have such an affinity for Carbondale.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, the SIU Touch of Nature Center is on Little Grassy Lake, and that campsite, let's see, I was at that camp, at that campsite in 1980.
Wow.
Yeah.
Going back to the roots.
I'm going back as director of performing arts, so.
That's going to be exciting.
I'm really, really looking forward to it.
And are you putting together like a whole ensemble?
Putting together a whole kind of curriculum, and we're doing, and I'm teaching music and doing a bunch of stuff.
That's incredible.
Yeah, some music, some magic, and
you know, and this is all the stuff that kids aren't getting in schools too.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like this is all the fun stuff.
Arts departments are drying up.
Yeah.
And, yep.
Which is ridiculous because I couldn't imagine going through school now with none of that stuff.
Oh, I would have gone insane.
Because it's like, yeah, me too. It's like, why would you take all the fun stuff out and then leave all the stuff that nobody ever uses as an adult? Like, I still have not used, like, Algebra 2, Trigonometry. Yeah. Like, I just haven't in anything. So when you take something out, like theater or music or something like that.
That's why you got to support and donate to your local schools.
My school actually has a program that is very highly supported in the city. It's all the other cities. It's up to the
parents. Like my son's school, it's up to the parents at that school to do fundraisers that fund music and art and theater and physical education.
It should be funded by the government. You know what I mean?
I know, that's a whole other show.
When are you doing that? What's the
I don't think
dates?
This is that kind of talk radio.
This is not.
What are you doing the Carbondale summer camp?
Let's see. I'm heading out there June 14th, is when things start. So I'm going to be there for about 6 weeks.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's been really exciting.
And when you come back, are you going to do anything at the Magic Castle?
Let's see, what is coming? Actually, before I head out there, I guess the most upcoming thing, let's see, June 10th, I will be in San Francisco hosting, there's an alternative to, it's basically an alternative to TED Talks, to the TED conference. It's called, wait for it, Bill.
Oh, that's awesome. Bill Talks?
That's great. B-I-L.
Excellent.
But that's excellent. Yeah. So that's happening.
Yeah.
So that's happening on the 10th. I'm actually emceeing the event. Which
that's going to be fun.
I'm really looking forward to. I've been doing a lot of emceeing lately, which I've really dug. That's, again,
that's
a whole
awesome.
Other story. I'm seeing some rock shows and stuff like that.
Oh, well, I saw the show Absinthe. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
the show?
I haven't seen it yet, but I definitely want to check it out.
And I was just thinking, I was like,
I love those crazy ensemble shows like that.
I know so many acrobats or dancers or aerialists.
They're all over this town.
Yeah, and I'm like, why? I don't need a show to travel to come to L.A. for that. Right. L.A. has exactly. so much of that. I'm like, I could literally put something like this together, and it would be amazing because of the people that, you know, we know. But, yeah, we hope to see you perform at the Magic Castle. You have to keep us posted.
I will.
Anything local. But also, we'd love to have you back again. You're just a phenomenal guest, and you have a magical mind, my friend.
Thank you.
Where can people find you for your website so they can get up to date?
Sure.
Shows and contact.
Well, I'm not sure about up to date, but
that's all right. As up to date as we can get.
You know how artists are.
Yes, yes.
But goldenhands.com. You know what? In fact, this is going to light a little fire under me to actually get this site finally updated, which needs to happen. But goldenhands.com has most of my contact info for getting to me.
Exciting.
Yeah, I can certainly.
I can't wait to see your next show because it's been a while since I've seen you, and we were just talking about that. And
cool.
I can't wait. I want to see it again.
August. Something coming up in August. I just got a call about it on the way over here. I will let you know when I get the full details.
Booyakash. Mm. And I'm going to bring you. I'm going to bring you, Eddie.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'll be fun.
It'll be a magical date.
It will be magical.
So
magical.
Well, on behalf of Andrew Goldenhirsch, Eddie Pence, I'm Nikki Carullo. We'll see you guys next week.
All right.